So to kick it off then, we're just really intrigued about your medical journey, a little bit about your history and how you found cannabis to cure illnesses.
Yeah, I've had a little bit of a backwards entry into cannabis. So, you know, I never thought that I'd be a doctor that was practicing in this space. But, you know, I think, you know, as a mom, you hit up against a wall and, you know, something starts where you just want to get around the wall. And so what started as being something for my own son has, you know, ended up being for, you know, lots of kids and advocating in the space. So, and becoming really comfortable in the space and trying to help other doctors navigate it as well.
Just tell us about your son then, if that's okay. And just how, you know, what were the complications there and how you actually end up turning to cannabis then, if that's all right.
Absolutely. So I have twins and I had a complication called twin transfusion syndrome, which is a complication that they tell you is rare, but, you know, it about 20 weeks, we found out that one twin wasn't getting enough blood. And so I had intrauterine surgery at 20 weeks. We thought that Nicholas would actually pass away, but he survived. And what they did was they separated the blood supply, basically. And then I went on to carry them until just over 30 weeks and then had an emergency C-section to deliver them due to his blood flow not being very good again. So initially we thought everything was okay, but then we had MRIs of both of them, their brains, and Nicholas's came back showing way too many folds in his brain. So at that time we didn't see a lot. We knew that he was at risk for seizures because his brain was so abnormal. But then over the following years, he was having really odd episodes of vomiting and various things that we couldn't explain. And then in, I believe it was 2015, he was diagnosed with something called electrical status epilepsy in sleep, where basically every time he went to sleep, he would be having seizures. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, we ended up starting to treat it with medication, which helped for a while. We then saw a seizure specialist who tweaked things a bit, and we were pretty stable. And then in the spring of 2016, things just escalated. He ended up, he had something called vomiting seizures, which this seizure specialist had figured out. Nobody else was able to sort of figure that one out. And he would aspirate because he has a mild cerebral palsy and he's not able to turn himself quickly. He would be lying down and be vomiting with his seizure and he would be aspirating. So he ended up in ICU and in hospital constantly due to respiratory stuff, you know, on BiPAP and having a lot of difficulty breathing due to the damage that was done to his lungs. And at the same time, you know, his seizures weren't controlled. And, you know, every time he got sick, then the seizures would get worse. When he had seizures, his respiratory stuff would get worse. So we were just in this revolving door with the hospital. And in fall of 2016, he had just spent like pretty much 6 months going in and out of hospital and ICU. And, you know, we had a discussion with his neurologist about whether we wanted him resuscitated and whether we wanted to involve the palliative care team. So at that point, I went home and I quit my clinic. At that point, I was working in a rural, a place about an hour from my house, but rurally. And I was doing clinic, hospital work, emergency and obstetrics as just a rural family doctor. And I couldn't make it to work anyway. I was literally going from Children's Hospital to work when I could. And, you know, I was way behind in patients. I couldn't see anybody. And so I went and I quit everything except emergency because emergency had more of a schedule that I could accommodate. It was like 8 hours. I go to work, leave my work there and come home or go back to the hospital. So at that point, I started looking online, looking for anything else that might help, just realizing that I didn't think Nicholas was going to survive much longer, especially with his respiratory stuff. So then I came across Charlotte's Web, and I approached my neurologist. She fortunately was very familiar with the studies that were going on with Epidiolex at the time. She had trained in the States, but in Canada at the time, there was no one really willing to help kids, especially in the academic center. A lot of them have policies, which I understand are very similar to the NHS, it sounds like, where they just don't. Like, it doesn't matter what the individual thinks. It's a blanket decision made by the department that they will not. And so I was told I had to go find a family doctor who is an expert in epilepsy and cannabis. And, you know, they couldn't help me do that either. So that was really frustrating. I did go and try to find someone. Everyone said no. I like, sorry, Jen, you know, we just can't help. I ended up having a bottle from a friend, you know, because at that time in Canada, like no one was really looking at it. And, you know, parents were kind of using hemp CBD for different things, you know, although I hadn't really been aware of all of that. So, you know, I ended up on a Friday night after not sleeping for nights on end, I went and bought this little bottle for like, I think it was $200 Canadian for like a 30 ml bottle. And, you know, I didn't know how much to give or anything, but I was desperate. I gave him a drop. And then, you know, he slept the whole night. And, you know, it was weird because I was checking on him all the time. Because I, at that point, I still sleep beside him, just because of, you know, being scared that, you know, he's going to have a seizure. But, you know, he slept the whole night and it was odd. I didn't think much of it because I really wasn't anticipating anything drastic happening. But, you know, he had seizures the whole Saturday. And then I gave him another drop in the morning, a drop at night. And the second night he slept again, you know, and this carried on all the way till Monday. And I think, you know, I was so overtired. I don't think I really was processing much except noticing that he was sleeping. And then on Monday morning, when I brought him to daycare, the daycare specifically, like they looked at me and they looked at him and they said, something's different. What, like, what's going on? Because he, and then when I looked at him, I realized he was awake and he looked like he was present. He wasn't a zombie, like on medication. We didn't stop any of the other medication, but he almost looked like he woke up and he was interacting with his friends. And, and then day after day, we saw, you know, an increase in his awareness and an increase in his abilities. And during the day, his seizures started to go down as well. And so, that was the beginning of our journey. I think the frustrating part was, you know, neurology told me that I should tell them if I started anything. So I phoned them and I said, you know, I'm quitting my practice because I had 2 weeks to close my practice. And, you know, I was at work, I phoned neurology. I'm like, okay, I've started this. I don't know what's going on, but his seizures are much better and he's sleeping. Like, and really the only thing they wanted to know was what doctor was helping me and basically told me that I had to stop it unless I had somebody helping me. And when I said he could die, because I mean, you know, the risk of sudden unexpected death in epilepsy is directly related to how many seizures you're having. So it's not an extrapolation to say, you know, if you increase my son's seizures by stopping something, you know, he could die because his seizures will increase. Right. And so anyways, the response just like shocked me. I remember that moment very clearly, because they said, yeah, he might die. And at that point, I just felt like the system wasn't fighting for my son. The system was more political and really just focused on, you know, policy and that. And I really felt as a parent and a physician that, you know, my son just didn't matter. And I remember sitting there going like, what do I do? Do I continue to do this and risk my license because I'm a physician, or do I stop it? And if he dies, I'll never forgive myself. Right. So, you know, I ended up, long story short, I just my colleagues around me, you know, saw what was kind of going on. And I, one of the doctors who was a family doctor who had never touched cannabis ever, she said to me, she said, Jen, I'll help you. She was, I have no clue what I'm doing, but clearly it's helping. And so we sat down and tried to write the first authorization for cannabis, which actually, I mean, we didn't know what we were doing. And it wasn't really like, but we didn't understand because family docs and physicians in general aren't really taught how to do that. And so anyways, neurology was happy. We carried on with the CBD that we were using. And then, you know, that just was kind of the start of our journey. And every year his seizures, I would say, dropped by 50% to the point where I think it's, I've lost track, but I think it's 4.5 years that we've been in, home. We haven't been in hospital at all. So, you know, the cost savings to the system is ginormous. You know, the cost to us for CBD is huge, but, you know, it's just, that's a whole different topic. But that's my personal story. That's how I sort of, you know, started in this space.
It's such a shame, isn't it? You know, obviously you've come from a place of passion and wanting to help people, but then being let down by the system. Is that how you feel? That you feel like it's a double-edged sword almost, like you wanted to go into this from a pure perspective, and then you're not met with that back when you needed it the most?
Absolutely. I felt very let down. And, you know, quite honestly, if I hadn't been a physician, I don't think I would have been able to do it. And my son probably wouldn't be here today. And so, and that's just based on the amount of seizures he was having and the risk of sudden unexpected death and epilepsy, plus all his respiratory stuff that was going on. So, you know, I think being a physician was the only way that I was able to navigate this.
It's just mind blowing. I can just feel it. This is a story of, you know, pure mother's love as well. And you'd literally go to any end to do, you know, to save your children. And we both have kids. We're fathers. And when you were telling the story, I could feel it inside, and I were relating it to, you know, to my thinking of it as being my own daughter. And I can just imagine what you've gone through, and it's just amazing. And first, I just want to say well done, and just keep doing what you're doing, because it's absolutely great and you're making a difference. But you do, there's a lot of risks in what you did there. I mean, could you just tell us and the listeners really what type of risk stuff you were risking in putting yourself in that position?
Yeah, you know, in Canada at the time, you know, well, so recreational cannabis became legal in 2018. So this happened in 2016. Right. You know, and so medical had always been legal with a physician, but, you know, to find a physician that would look after a child was pretty much impossible, because not even the cannabis physicians would see kids. And so, you know, at that point, to give my child cannabis without a physician's authorization basically means that social services can get involved. And in lots of cases, they can take your child, you know, because it's viewed as, you know, being a negative sort of thing. So, you know, there's the social implications there, but also as a physician, you know, obviously, you know, you can imagine that being in that situation would probably affect your ability to practice as well. So, you know, at that point, I think, you know, I do remember sitting there thinking about it and completely scared that I was going to lose my career, that I was having to choose between my son and my career. I had just gone through a big divorce the year before. So I was struggling as a single mom, trying to look after three kids, and I have them like 90% of the time. And so, you know, there wasn't a lot of other help. You know, I did have kind of a respite person that was helping me. My parents live out of town, but my mom was trying to help. You know, but having one child in hospital and two kids at home, you know, and at this point, the twins were only 4 years old, right? So they're like difficult at that stage, never mind two of them. So, yeah, it was quite a difficult decision at the time because I was risking my ability to provide for my kids.
Talk about resilience.
Yeah.
I've never heard mental strength like that. That how you have come through that and continue to do what you're doing is absolutely unbelievable. Like, respect to you. That is unreal. Yeah, I'm blown away by that. I really am. Is that, from what you did with your son, is that the best transformation that you've seen from cannabis through working with other patients?
No, I've seen a lot. You know, cannabis doesn't work for everyone. You know, but when it works, it really changes people's lives. Mm-hmm. So I have a practice now, where I basically see all ages, and I see patients through consult with a primary doctor, whether it be, you know, pediatrics or adults. And, you know, so I'm seeing patients for everything from pain to palliation to epilepsy, autism, you know, and the drastic differences I've seen have been, you know, all over the map. So for epilepsy, I have had a few patients who, you know, had been even all over the world, even to England, to South America, you know, looking for answers, looking for therapies, you know, and started this one patient that I'm thinking about on CBD, and seizures like dissipated. You know, this patient was able to, what you see is when you stop the seizures, then the child progresses. And so they're able to, you know, their development increases. So when their brain is not so busy seizing, you know, it's able to process new things and they're able to develop. And I think that is the key thing that needs to be looked at, because you know, if a child is failing traditional medications, you know, 2 to 3 medications, and they're still seizing hourly, you know, trying CBD could be the difference between that child, you know, developing or not developing. Because if the CBD helps and works, that child not only stops seizing, but their development starts to progress again. And so for my own son, if his seizures hadn't really, I mean, he still has some seizures, so they're not completely stopped. But, you know, going from a couple seizures an hour to, you know, he'll have a seizure in the morning sometimes, or like if he's sick, you know, that made the difference in his development. So now his brain has been able to create new pathways. You know, he is able to learn things. He's able to communicate with an iPad, you know, all because the seizures are under control. So I think, you know, that is a huge thing that people benefit from.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any negative impacts of it from what you've seen? You know, obviously there's the positives from it, but is there any negative sides that you've seen from it? I'm working with it.
I definitely have. So specifically for kids, you know, it is really important that you do explore cannabis with someone who's knowledgeable. Like in Canada, that would be a nurse practitioner or a physician, because there are kids even with epilepsy, and I've helped hundreds of kids, you know, where it actually makes kids worse. So for some kids, we've seen almost like an increase in drop seizures or just flaccidity. And in talking with the developmental doctors, they've seen it too with kids that are using it for spasticity. So it depends on the mechanism that's causing the spasticity and the seizures. But and I think that this is something that maybe will be explored in the future. But there are times when we just stop it because all of a sudden it just seems like the drop seizures are worsening or the child is more flaccid. And, you know, at this point, there's in Canada too, with not being able to use other cannabinoids, you know, we just have to sort of use what we have. And then if it's getting worse, we stop it. Now for autism, there have been cases where kids, you know, get a whole lot worse. And it's very few, but, you know, if the behavioral issues are getting a whole lot worse, we have a couple different sort of strategies that we would try, but, you know, we stop it immediately if things are in any way worsening. But that is, you know, 1 in 100, you know, that's just the caution and the, you know, the reason why we need to understand this more. And it's really important that parents aren't exploring this on the side by themselves, you know, and that we have a whole care team that's involved with it. What we've seen in Canada, and when I've talked with oncology, especially the cancer doctors, is that they know that the kids' parents are exploring this anyways. And so initially they were really reluctant to bring on somebody like myself to help. But when they realized that these families were basically dealing with oncology and, you know, not being honest about cannabis use and going and getting cannabis from God knows where and dosing it based on whatever, they started realizing that it was a lot safer to try to work together and have a team that incorporated cannabis into that child's care plan. And so there's a lot of struggles with that in terms of cost and like access and things like that. But we've worked really hard, even with the companies, to negotiate discounts for these kids to make it accessible so that kids can afford to use it the proper way in Canada and that we can sort of all work together and try to incorporate it safely.
And the doses vary as well in the type of plant that you use? Or is it kind of a one size fits all approach where it's a particular dose and you don't go beyond that? Or is that variable for individuals?
It is variable based on what we're looking to treat. In Canada, we don't have a lot of selection for strains. So I do notice in other countries, and especially in the States, you know, there's a cannabis strain specific type of therapies. Here in Canada, with the licensed producers, we're really working with oils that are, you know, there's everything from isolates to full spectrum and a variety of types of full spectrum. And so for myself, I try to work with CBD oils that are more full spectrum, you know, and incorporating THC when needed. I actually prefer to dose them separately, and have, you know, worked with a few different companies and generally know what to expect with those oils. But honestly, in Canada, there's hundreds and hundreds of companies, and to navigate that is really difficult. And so, you know, parents at this point, you know, are kind of stuck using the oils because, there's a lot more steps involved should they want to, say, grow or make their own. And the complications in the extraction process are really not something that I would recommend for parents to do, especially if we can explore other options and get something that does work.
Yeah. Okay. Can you tell us the difference between THC and CBD and the benefits of them both, or, you know, just a little bit about each one? For anybody that doesn't know?
Absolutely. So the cannabis plant actually has over 100 what we call cannabinoids, and THC and CBD are the main ones that we have been looking at. And in Canada, there's very few other ones that we're able to actually get, especially on the medical side for kids. So CBD is what we use for seizures primarily. Also, it's an anti-inflammatory, so we do use it for pain as well. THC is what we know as the psychoactive component of cannabis, and it does have psychoactive properties. But if you use it in various ways, you can actually mitigate that. For example, if you use it with CBD, you can reduce the risk of the psychoactivity. If you use it sublingually, you can bypass some of the processes that make it psychoactive. Generally, you know, working with both of them for whatever you're trying to treat, you know, has varying degrees of effectiveness depending on the person, depending on what you're using, and depending on what you're trying to treat. So,
I just wanted to tell you about one of our colleagues who's been working for me for the last couple of years now. Now he's got Crohn's disease, and he went through all of the medical, you know, medications you could think of to try and help his condition, and none of it seemed to work. And he eventually ended up having 50% of his bowel removed. And the one saving grace that he has discovered is cannabis, and it's completely helped reverse the symptoms and everything. So I just wanted to kind of share that with you and just kind of say, you know, is there any, it's not just down to helping seizures. It can help with so many different things, Kai. It just seems to be such a potentially wonderful thing to lean on, really.
Absolutely. I actually have a friend that had a similar experience, and he does work in the cannabis space helping patients, and it's based on his own experience with Crohn's as well.
Right.
Yeah. Oh. And it's interesting, you know, I work in emergency, and so I see a lot of patients with chronic pain, and, you know, my hospital has been really great with supporting patients that use cannabis. You know, I've done a lot of education and really tried to teach the nurses in emergency too, how to ask about it, how to just basic knowledge about it. So, you know, when patients are coming in, a lot of times I'll just say, you know what, a lot of patients that are experiencing the pain that you're having are using cannabis. I said, have you ever used cannabis or thought about it? And a lot of them will look at you like you're like, what? You're asking me about cannabis in a hospital? And I always say, no, like I do help patients with this on the side. And, you know, I think that it works amazing for some people, and I'm just asking about it. There's no judgment here at all, you know? Mm-hmm. And then they open up, and a lot of them either have explored it or using it, but not knowing what they're doing, or they really wanted to, but they have been either shut down by their doctor or they have just been scared to ask. And so, you know, for some of these patients, I will just offer to follow them in the community and, you know, either help them with their dosing of what they're already doing, or, you know, give them some guidance to, and I do like a 3 to 6 month trial to try to see, you know, if it is going to be effective. And then at least they know, because it is expensive and it is a process. So I think it's super important to set a timeline and reevaluate, is this helping? Is it not? Especially when it comes to pain and that. And honestly, there's been patients that now I don't see an emergency because they're back to work, you know, they're feeling much better. They're going to the gym, they're back to work, you know, and now we're fighting with, you know, trying to get it covered by, you know, the disability or, you know, whoever has been funding their, them off work and stuff like that. So
yeah
it's been really transforming for so many patients.
The stigma has to stop now, doesn't it? You know, things have to change. And even that thing of the look that you've had, you know, that judgmental look, or should we be talking about this? You know, it's quite a process, isn't it? Still, even though it's been legalized in your country for quite some time now, it's still got that stigma attached to it.
It absolutely does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, what I've recognized is that when you can bring it down to kids, you know, and you can get people starting to think about what cannabis is doing in kids, then, you know, whether it's an educator, a politician, you know, or someone in the healthcare field, they start thinking about that when they're forced with a decision about their opinion, even on cannabis. You know, I did do a presentation to Parliament here, a year and a half ago or so. And, you know, it's the Conservative Party, which, you know, they're not super known to be cannabis friendly, but every single politician that attended, and I think most of the party was there, they all at the end of the talk stopped and said, I had no idea. I never thought about cannabis and its relation to kids, but I will never think about it different. Like, I will never think about it the same way. Yeah. And how can we help you? I mean, it's, so what I've seen in multiple presentations, and I offer to go everywhere. Like a lot of stuff I just do, I go to schools, I go to wherever wants to have me, just to talk about my son, talk about the kids, because if you can get people, thinking about kids and seeing the kids that are helped, those people will change their own practice. And once you get so many people changing their own practice, then I think that's a huge way to change the world. It doesn't always come from the top down. Right. So, I've really seen a lot of change happening with that.
Yeah. What a legacy. The pain that you've been through is horrendous, but what you've been able to do for hundreds of more children and patients all around is unbelievable. So does it feel like it's a tough one to probably put your finger on, but does it feel like now where you are right now in life, does it feel like it was worth it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question, right? I think that if I hadn't been a mom, I would not have risked so much. I think that because I was a mom and because my kid's life depended on it, the only thing I could do with all the frustration and remember, I just went through a horrible divorce. I was dealing with a lot, but I just basically was able to funnel my energy into something that I could work towards. And having success and getting more success with it, in terms of advocacy and helping and, just helped me to, focus on that. And it got me through a lot, just having that focus too. So, but if I hadn't been a mom, if I was just a physician that helped somebody and saw that it helped, I wouldn't have had the same drive to do anything. But I think when I think about things now, my goal is that my son has to be able to live at home, in the community, at school, and be able to travel through those places and the hospital, with using his medicine. So my child needs to have the same rights as any other child, even though he's using cannabis as medicine. And so that is sort of become the goal that I look to whenever I'm looking at a situation, and that's the goal for the patients that I help here in Manitoba. And we've made a lot of progress. Kids here generally can go to school, go to hospital, and live in the community while using their cannabis. The next step will be, can they travel? And that's a more complicated thing. But, the fact that a child on cannabis can't go to Disney World, is interesting. That gets people looking and gets people thinking, right? But that's two countries that have different policies. So,
Do you use it yourself for anything in particular?
I have definitely experienced benefits from cannabis. I have used it in the past for anxiety, and that has helped quite substantially. I currently use it for sleep. And, helping people sleep is a huge part of my adult practice. I feel like sleep is underestimated. And if you can get people sleeping, everything gets better. Pain, anxiety, depression. Mm-hmm. You see people's lives turned around if they can get a solid, 6 to 8 hours of sleep. Mm-hmm. So that is something that I've done for 4 or 5 years now, and that's I would never stop it. Yeah,
you're ahead of the curve there. But on our last episode, actually, we spoke to a world leading sleep expert, so we're on the same path there. And it's literally
still riding that wave,
riding the wave. But yeah, he says it's the number one health pillar, and I completely agree, because everything just falls apart if you don't get that sleep right.
I do. Huh? I really do. I fall apart massively. I crash and burn if I don't get my sleep. I'm terrible for that. Slightly off topic, Jennifer, but what does a day in the life for you look like when it comes to health, nutrition, any mindset rituals, or anything that you do that you practice daily to keep you in check and to look after yourself?
Good question. With COVID and working in emergency and the shortages in staff have really impacted that over the last few years for me. Right now I'm in a transition, trying to balance my work with my home life. And that I find for me is a yearly thing, because things pile up and then you got to take things off your plate, and try to make sure that my kids are number one, working shift work, and being a single parent, obviously I do have to work and my kids do get care from babysitter. But for myself, I do try to go to the gym. It's not as often as I want to. I do focus on sleep. And so I am very big on, going to bed at a certain time and getting up and using my cannabis for sleep. And then I do get up early and I usually have about an hour to myself where I organize my day. I have my coffee, and I have some music on, and I find that, that has always been super important. I also do a lot of listening to audiobooks. I have a good 45 minute to an hour commute to work every day. And so, listening to everything from, Gabor Mate, to Brené Brown, and inspirational type of books has always been something that has been important to me and helped me navigate through life.
Awesome. Nice. What sort of training do you do, Jennifer, when you get the chance? What sort of sparks your interest?
Like medicine related?
No,
or not?
Just for physical training purposes.
Physical training.
I
do a lot of like weight training, so I'm not a very good runner or involved in those types of activities, but I do that. I also actually really enjoy board sports. So before COVID, I would get away to go to surf camps, and to most recently I was in Aruba for a conference, but I went there because they had a good kite surfing community. And so that's been something that I keep busy with. And in the winter, I get away to go snowboarding. And those are my, nice. My things that I have liked to do for 20, 25 years. So, so I will frequently leave on a Thursday, come home on a Tuesday, because that's how long my kids are away. And I will go and snowboard for a weekend in the mountains and come back. And that is kind of how I reset, clear my head. And
so important.
Yeah.
So important. It's all good. You're making a massive difference in your professional life, but in order to do that, you do need to look after yourself as well. So important. And I actually used to snowboard myself. So it's something I'd like to get back into. Unfortunately, we don't have access to the mountains in the UK, really. Well, where we're from anyway, Dan. So I used to just go down the dry ski slopes. But I used to love that. So I think you've set my interest back off again by mentioning it there.
Well, that's the importance of it, like nature as well, isn't it? To really clear your mind and fill your cup back up again, to get around those things. And ultimately, I'm a massive believer we all need that. We all have to connect with nature as much as we can. So it's good to have that, reaffirmed by yourself, that this is something that is kind of essential to get ourselves back up there again, to recharge us and recenter us. So that's really cool. Has cannabis ever been a social thing where you can actually, use it with friends and have a giggle and things like that? Or is it just purely a medicinal thing?
Like for myself?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I don't obviously advocate, you know, socially using it when there's kids around, but, you know, me and my partner are definitely, you know, use cannabis for both medical and social reasons. I think personally, it's much better than alcohol or any other substance.
Yeah.
It definitely helps you sleep, and it definitely doesn't make you grumpy. Or, you know, I found at one point that even coming home and having a glass of wine, I'd be more grumpy with my kids. But, you know, if you have, we in Canada, we have cannabis drinks that are just a low amount of CBD. Sometimes they have THC in them, but they really just chill you out. And it's like just coming home and chilling and relaxing, and you don't feel moody. You don't have that like hangover like you would from alcohol. You're not high. Mm-hmm. You just chill. And a lot of times when the stress is high at work or stress is high with, you know, what's going on around me, you know, it's really important not to translate that onto your kids. Mm-hmm. And to, you know, I think we show our kids resilience, and we show our kids how to sort of roll with the punches and that, you know, and being aware of our own anxiety or our own stress, and using ways to relieve it that are not intoxicating is important.
Amen to that.
Amen. Yeah. Jennifer, I'm interested because obviously you're heavily involved with cannabis, which is a plant medicine. I'm personally interested in other plant medicines and psychedelics as well, which we are going to be delving into. We're both interested, aren't we, Dan?
We are interested.
We are going to be covering in different episodes, but I'm just wondering if there's any other plant medicines, psychedelics that you are, one, interested in, or think that can be beneficial in a medical sense as well.
Absolutely. At this point in Canada, psychedelics are officially illegal, but, you know, physicians can help patients if they are covered under research, and I can't remember, it's like an exemption, and patients can apply for an exemption for things like palliative purposes. And so this has just started to really escalate in Canada. There's a group called Therapsil, which I'm involved with. I haven't personally done the training in it yet, just because it's not offered where I live, and I actually have to find a time when I can fly somewhere for a week to do it. But I'm very interested. I've seen it change lives. I do work again in emergency, where we have a lot of psychiatric things that we encounter that have been, you know, not helped with traditional medicine and failing everything, right? And so I do feel like, you know, maybe it will start with these patients, not specifically, but in general, you know, and as people get more comfortable with it and see lives change, then, you know, it will start to infiltrate, you know, to patients that, you know, may be able to access it first line. Much like we've seen with cannabis, you know, the more people that interact with it and see the effects and experience, you know, seeing their patients' lives changes, you know, then they become more comfortable, you know, they realize it's not so scary. You know, and I think that's what's going to happen with psychedelics as well. But I'm 100% on board for psychedelics. Unfortunately, right now, it's just this, you know, this difficult thing to navigate here in Canada. It's definitely underground. You know, but it's just, as a physician, you have to be really careful what you you're involved with, and that's, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the lesson here really is to start thinking outside the box. You know, we can always take something from everyone, and this conversation is just really more eye-opening to think a little bit broader than just what we know. And understanding that the medical industry can fail us as well. They can, you know, it saves a lot of lives, don't get me wrong, and it does a lot of good. but it's still a big money making industry. And it's something that, you know, from this chat in particular, just is more eye opening to really start to think outside the box, you know, more so, and get rid of the stigma attached to these things, and be more open minded into exploring and figuring out a solution to make us better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we need to understand also that these things have been around for thousands of years and they're growing the ground. So, yeah, that's also important to, you know, just like I say, it's been stigmatized for a long time. And 70s, the war on drugs, obviously that were a big turning point, shall we say, when everything was made illegal. Alcohol and tobacco, not so much. But yeah, psychedelics, I think, have a really promising future, in a medical sense, in a spiritual sense, all of that stuff. So it's a really exciting topic to delve into. I've kind of gone down the rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting too. It's a whole different perspective that a lot of my colleagues aren't familiar with. But when you're talking about plant medicine, you know, it really relies on the person that's providing it to have experienced it, and maybe more so for psychedelics. But you know, I think that in traditional medicine, you know, you're not always trying everything that your patients are, that you're giving to your patients, right? But in the alternative medicine community, and specifically in cannabis and psychedelics, a lot of the practitioners are very versed in the field and use it personally for various reasons. And I think that that really helps, and creates a whole different patient physician encounter and environment. And it really, yeah, it's a different way of practicing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But for the greater good, I feel.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's just a whole different field and a different way of helping patients. So.
That's cool. We're going to finish this one off, Jennifer, with a quick fire. So basically we're just whatever suits you the best. So, we'll ask one each. So plants or meds?
Sorry, I have to pick one.
Yeah.
plants. Plants.
Weights or cardio?
Oh, the answer
in terms of
weights.
Yeah.
Physical or mental stimulation for health?
Physical.
The animal diet or plant-based?
Plant-based.
The city life or country life?
Country life.
Nice.
Nice. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you, Jennifer. Where can the listeners find you? Is there any literature, books, other podcasts, anything that you have for us that you can, you know, if anybody's listening to this and they think, I want to know more about Jennifer, where can we find you?
Yeah, I do have a website. It's www.cannabisdoc.ca. So cannabis, nice. D-O-C. And so a lot of things are linked to that website. I did contribute to a book last year called Courage in Cannabis with my colleague, Dr. Bridget Williams. And so that's a collection of stories related to cannabis and our stories in there. Our documentary actually just came out on Amazon Prime in the States. Yeah. And I think it's coming out in the UK soon. If it's not already, it's called Anything Can Happen. And it, it documents my journey with my son and the evolution of my practice, as well as, it talks about three different patients that I've sort of followed for 5-6 years. And yeah, I'm on Instagram at Confessions of a Single Doctor Mom. And I'm on LinkedIn as Dr. Jennifer Anderson. So yeah, those are my main ones. I don't really have time to maintain social media very much. So
I get that. I get you.
You're too busy doing the important stuff. So don't worry about that.
I try. I do spurts and then I get into a rabbit hole doing, you know, with life. So
that's awesome. We've really enjoyed chatting with you and keep doing what you're doing because it's absolutely amazing work and excited to see what you end up achieving and all the best with your life and everything.
Absolutely. Great. Well, thank you so much for having me. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Take care. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another inspiring self-made story. And we hope you enjoyed the show. We would be very grateful if you could kindly leave us a review as it will help us impact a wider audience. You can do this on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you want to reach out on the socials, find us across all platforms using at the Self-Made Minds Podcast. See you next time, and happy success making.